I am always chaotic good, just so you know.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 321, recorded on August 12th, 2013. Hello, and welcome to the 321st edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and 154th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Jonah Falcon.
And I am Jordan Lund.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry and gives us gaming history. We probably know what the gaming history is going to be since we did the first three consoles of the sixth generation.
We're running out of consoles.
Yeah, and since the PS3 and the Wii and the Xbox 360 came out in 2005 and 2006 twice, we're not going to be able to do either of those until 2015. So you'll have
we got a good couple years to go.
Yeah, and there are other consoles we never even talked about. I mean, I don't think we ever discussed the CDI, for one.
I don't know if you classify the CDI as a console. I mean, it was a set-top box, and that was a whole separate category.
They promoted it as a console, so it's a console. Just because one company didn't make it, you know, several companies made it.
There were lots of machines in that class, though. There was the Tandy Viz. That was a failure. There was the Apple Pippin.
You already did the Apple Pippin.
Didn't even make it out of Japan.
But the Apple Pippin wasn't really even a console itself. It was just a Mac with a keyboard with a joystick attached to it.
No, it was an actual game machine. It was produced in conjunction with Bandai.
Yeah, but it ran Apple apps.
It didn't run Apple software. Well, it ran Apple software in the same way that the Microsoft Xbox ran Windows.
Well, anyways, so what have you been playing this week?
I have been playing new Surface Owner still, getting games up and running in the Surface and exploring the Windows Store and seeing what games there are to be had out there in the Windows Store land. So far, the best games are all Microsoft made. The Microsoft Solitaire Collection, the Microsoft Mahjong, the Microsoft Minesweeper, all, you know, brand new versions of the classic Microsoft games, and they're free. I did find a very cool game called EVAC. And what EVAC is kind of it's a maze game, kind of like Pac-Man, where you chomp the dots.
Right.
But it also has a puzzle element in it, kind of like that game where you move the boxes around. I'm blanking on the name of it right now. Sokoban. So the ghosts are chasing you and going to eat you, but you can move blocks around to seal them in rooms and like do Ladybug. Stuff like that.
Or Ladybug or Mousetrap or
yeah, kind of like that with high res graphics and stuff like that. EVAC is worth taking a look at.
Actually, Pango, you're just shoving blocks that they crack and open yeah. stuff.
And another Sokoban-style game called Skitty, where you tilt the board to slide pieces around and get them into the exits. Interesting little games, but you know nothing equivalent to a console game by any stretch of the imagination.
I've been playing Civ 5, but I've also been playing the beta of a game that we're going to be discussing later in this thing, which I find very fascinating. We're going to be discussing it later. So immediately, we're going to go straight to game news. Take it away, Jordan.
All PS Vitas, $199 at Target, August 18th through the 24th. And this comes to us from GameSpot, among others. It seems everybody was talking about this one. All PlayStation Vita games will be marked down to $199 at Target beginning all PlayStation Vita systems will be marked down to $199 at Target beginning August 18th and running through August 24th, according to a leaked Target advertisement obtained by Blu-ray forums. The ad specifies that all PS Vita game systems will be marked down. The handhelds currently retail for $250 for the Wi-Fi version and $300 for the 3G model. Neither Sony nor Target were immediately available for comment. The PS Vita received a price cut in Japan in February, but Sony said in February that no such price drop would be extended to North America due to exchange rates and other factors. Decisions about price drops are made on a region-by-region basis, Sony Worldwide Studios President Shuya Yoshida said at the time.
Yeah, 200 is still too much for a Vita for me. Sorry,
two hundred is still too much. But this is interesting news in that it's the retailer making the cut. Sony has not officially announced any cut unless they do it at Gamescom, which is possible. But you know,
also Sony does have a pre-show conference. I mean,
they do have a pre-show conference. But if it's Target doing it and not Sony, this is indicating that the retailer is losing faith in the console. They're discounting it to move inventory. If Sony doesn't have an equivalent announcement at Gamescom, this could be the beginning of the end of the Vita. Because you and I have seen console failures time and time and time again. The first step is when the retailers start cutting the price.
I don't know if we this is worse. I don't know if we discussed this in the show. I know I discussed it with you over the phone, but the British company that Walmart owns, so you might as well call it Aldous or something like that.
Right.
They actually they decided not to sell the Wii U at all anymore.
Right.
They've completely. I don't even know if they're remaindering the stock. I think they just stopped selling it. Period.
The other piece of bad news for the Vita, I'm not going to say for Sony because it's not Sony in general, but for the Vita was the new game that Sony came out with called PlayStation All-Stars Island, right? Which is an Android and iOS game with the PlayStation characters, all of the people from Gravity Rush and Uncharted and so on and so forth on Android and iOS, but they didn't see fit themselves as a developer to bring it to the Vita or for the PlayStation mobile platform.
They already announced that there would be no DLC for that game anymore. They're cutting ties with it. So why would they make a...
Well, that you're mistaking it for PlayStation All-Stars, which is the PlayStation 3
Infinity. Yes, I get it. But if they've given up on the IP, then why would they bother dealing with the Vita version?
Well, it's a new game. It's not tied to the other game.
Big time. No one cared. Sony made a major misstep in thinking that people would even give two shits about what if you had Solid Snake fighting Kratos.
Right.
You know, Super Smash Bros. Is a Wii game, and it's basically a button masher. And I know people are going to kill me for saying that, but you know what? It's a button masher for 10-year-olds, basically.
Yes.
Because that's all I see playing it. And my cousin.
Well, and as I refer, you know, I'm fond of referring to it as baby's first fighting game.
I don't even know if it's a fighting game. It's just a platform, and it's sort of like Mario Brothers, the original Mario Brothers, except there's four of you, and you're trying to beat the crap out of each other.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's kind of wrapping up into a big ball of suck for the Vita owners like myself.
How big is the PS4 now for Sony?
The PS4 is better be huge. And I don't know what their plans are, but you know, I've got my pre-order down for a PS4. We'll see where it goes.
Well, we already saw that none of the other divisions, Sony divisions, are making money. Only the PS4 and their insurance division that's not even in the US is making money for them.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I think their movie studios are doing okay.
Oh, I mean the movie studios, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Forgot about that.
And the new Spider-Man movie looks like they fixed a lot of the mistakes from Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man, so that's good.
Dead and buried, so don't even bother. I mean, no one cares about Spider-Man anymore. Which is interesting because wasn't Spider-Man supposed to be a part of the Avengers?
No, Spider-Man.
In the comics, he was one of the Avengers.
In like one of the last incarnations of the Avengers, yeah.
I know it's heavily associated with him. I mean, Spider-Man's everywhere. I mean,
Spider-Man's been closer to the Fantastic Four than he's been to the Avengers.
Yeah, I was about to call him the Final Fantasy. The Final Fantasy Four. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. And this is the game I've been playing. I've been playing the beta of. You know, it was released. But Communist Border Crossing Immigration Official Game Papers, Please, now available. And this comes to us from Strategy Informer. Indie developer 3909 LLC has released its much talked about border crossing immigration official sim, Papers Please, which gives the gamer the experience of being a bureaucrat in an oppressive communist country, forced to determine if people crossing the border are simple immigrants or enemy agents. As the press of people increase, the lines blur, and the player may find himself taking bribes to support his ever-dwindling budget, detaining the innocent, and letting smugglers, drug dealers, and terrorists and political activists go through, quote-unquote, using only the documents provided by travelers and the Ministry of Admissions, primitive inspect, search, and fingerprint systems. You must decide who can enter Arstotzka, and who will be turned away or arrested. states the developer. The main single game player lasts about 4 hours over the course of 31 in-game days, with 20 different endings depending on your performance. The game also comes with three special modes: time, perfection, and endurance. Players who finish the campaign also unlock the endless mode with a special code. Have you seen or played this yet?
I have not, but it sounds absolutely hilarious. I wonder, how they got the idea to put you in the role of the bureaucrat rather than
You're the guy who has to stamp, admit, or, you're the border crossing guard, bureaucrat. They hand you their passport, and you have to stamp, okay, you can go in, or no, you're turned away at the border. Eventually, you start detaining people, if they're suspicious. And it takes.
Well, they would all be suspicious, right? I mean, they're trying to gain entry to your country.
Well, I mean, some people. In the first day, one guy just walks up and tells you opening the border was a mistake, and then just walks away. After someone complained about being on the line for 8 hours.
And that's hilarious.
The first day, you're not supposed to let anybody in except citizens,
And this right, right.
Citizen, he was, So, and the next day, they open it to foreigners. It's just. It, as you would imagine, in a communist country in the 1980s and the early 80s, it's very drab. The music is very Volga Boatman-ish. The Volga Boatman, right?
Dun, yes.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yes.
And the thing is, it's not only a game, but it's also a learning experience too.
It sounds hilarious.
Should check out the papers, please.
I would just like to see the companion game where you're the drug runner trying to break the border. I think that would be also entertaining.
No, it's better because one of the possible endings I would imagine is you get executed.
Probably, yeah. How many of the endings have you seen so far?
I haven't seen any of the endings. I've only started the first few of it, but it's gotten a lot of buzz for the past few weeks.
I will have to look that up online.
This is a very Sierra Online games, for the 16-bit computers at the time, if you remember that style.
Yeah, yeah.
It actually looks exactly like a C64 game,
Interesting.
Yeah.
So you're saying I would have no trouble running it on the Surface. That would be nice.
No. Well, if you can run Windows software, yeah.
That's true, yeah.
I'm going to give a link to play the free beta, which is basically the game, just doesn't have. So in the beginning, it says "awesome picture here." they didn't add that part. It is, but like I said, it's really a political learning experience. I mean, even if it's taking place in the early 80s, you learn a lot about the pressures. Because here's the thing: is that if you don't see enough people, you don't make enough money, and suddenly, you have to start considering taking bribes.
Right.
And you have family members on the side, and something may happen to them if you can't afford them, or if something bad happens, or if you get caught letting in some political activist, so you're pressured into breaking the law, the communist law, So
right, right.
And the pressure keeps on coming up. You have more and more things they have to deal with. I mean, they showed this fat woman. And she was strip searched, and she had on her back something strapped to it, maybe drugs, I don't know. And it's just, the first person who comes up to your thing is a little old lady who says, "Finally, I get to go home," and you approve her in, and she's actually a thing. So, it's sort of like, it's sort of like tricking you, like, this is going to be easy,
I see.
But the thing is,
like the chick sorting game in Work Time Fun on the PlayStation Portable.
It's funny all these games now that and of course this is on Steam, and it might have been a Greenlight game, I'm not sure. But a lot of games on Steam Greenlight have the weirdest themes. One of the games that was approved on Steam Greenlight, you're going to love this, is called Viscera. Oh geez, I forgot the name, but it's hilarious.
Well, that reminds me, I'm going to have to get Steam up and running on this. I haven't done that yet. Things to do.
Who knows? Maybe Gabe Newell will automatically have it reject your thing. It's called Viscera Cleanup Detail. Now, what it essentially is there's been a massive alien invasion on a space station, right? And the heroes have won the day and all that. Your job is the janitor after all that, cleaning up everything. The blood on the floor, the guts on the that are hanging around, the radioactive shit, the bullet casings and all that stuff. And all you do is wander around this empty space station It's really creepy. Cleaning up blood with your mop and putting entrails into a radioactive, not a radioactive, but, you know, one of those buckets which has a little radioactive symbol on it or toxic thing. That's all you do in this game.
It's kind of like there was a Marvel comic like that, or maybe it was DC. I don't remember, but it was the cleanup crew that comes in after the superhero fights and puts everything back to normal.
But, you know, it's strange at what games people find enthralling. The most boring stuff in the world. I mean, you're playing a janitor. Yeah, it's creepy and it's dark. And there's blood all over the place and human and alien guts all over the place. But you're still a janitor cleaning up. Why not have a rock concert cleanup crew?
You know, you joke, but it's very strange. Shenmue being a classic example, or was it Shenmue 2? I can't remember. I get the two conflated in my mind. But one of the two Shenmue games, there was a bit where you were a forklift driver, and I could not get enough of the forklift game. I kept going back to it over and over again. And all it was driving a forklift, moving boxes around. I loved it.
You know, in Fable 2 and 3, remember what you do there? You have those mini games in which you're just making arrows or chopping wood. You're chopping wood. But also there's another game that's really, really popular in Germany, and it's a truck driving simulation in which you're driving a truck. You're driving a truck from one place to the other, carrying goods. There's also one in which you're playing in a mid-80s Russian I don't know if it's a logging company or something like that. But the thing is that's actually an educational experience, because with that, you have to deal with getting your truck stuck in the mud, you know, and all that. So there's a lot of really, one of the biggest games in Germany is also Farming Sim. You get to ride your tractor. And I would be laugh if an actual farmer actually played that. They have to relax, so they play Farming Simulator, so they can ride their virtual tractor after riding their real tractor.
I heard they like farming.
You know, there are three things a man can bring about his end: drinking, women, and farming. It's true. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Take it away, Jordan.
New Jersey court approves a used game lawsuit against GameStop, and this comes to us from Game Politics. And I have a thing on my screen that I can't get rid of. There it is. A federal judge in Camden, New Jersey, has given the green light on a lawsuit against GameStop filed by three customers who claim that three of the company's South Jersey stores sold used games that sometimes cost more than buying the game new. The lawsuit alleges that GameStop did not disclose to customers that buying used games would have additional costs anywhere from $10 to $15 online. All three of the plaintiffs bought EA games, which up until recently contained online passes. John Farley of Marlton, New Jersey, was the first to sue the company. He bought Need for Speed Hot Pursuit X or 10, I'm not sure. Need for Speed Hot Pursuit X, used in 2011.
I think that took might it be home a PS2 and tried to, game.
It could be. Took it home and tried to play it online. That was when he was hit with an extra fee of $15. Jamar McGee of Beverly and Hakana Ozdenser of Blackwood also alleged that GameStop deceived them when they bought used games. Each paid $45 for used games. McGee bought Madden 2010, and Ozdenser purchased FIFA Soccer 2010. Both had to pay an additional fee to play it online. The lawsuit seeks refunds for those who bought games since June 2006 in New Jersey. A similar lawsuit in California led to a settlement by the retailer in April of last year. GameStop agreed to pay consumers who purchased certain used video games, we assume those containing online passes, $15. GameStop also agreed to post signs on the shelves for the next 2 years in California stores and online, notifying customers that they may have to pay extra for the DLC that's tied to used games. Electronic Arts discontinued the use of online passes earlier this year, admitting the scheme was a bad idea.
I know how they could have avoided all this if they just sold their used games for less.
Or if they, you know, had listened to us when we told them, hey, that's a bad idea.
Here's the thing is that, one thing, you have to be an informed consumer sometime. A lot of people know that there are online passes, and so they're not going to expect to play online when they play these games. Right. I've never really played online with these games. I never play sports games online, for one. I never bother.
I rarely play online to begin with. But you would think that you know, they would know going in that there's going to, you know, if they're buying the Xbox version, at the very minimum, they have to have Xbox Live, right? Yeah. So there's automatically an extra fee there.
Well, no, but they're paying for all their games that way. I mean, it's not just one game, right? But you know, the thing is that what I find interesting, GameStop is actually offering $50 credit for certain games right now.
Yeah, if you buy a current gen version of a game that's going to have a next gen counterpart, yeah, when the Xbox One and PS4 come out, you can get a $50 credit towards the new game, which, you know, is kind of a neat idea.
Because reportedly the sales of the sports games, the EA sports games, have been almost dismal because people are just holding off buying the current gen version and just waiting for the next gen version. I'm sure it's going to be the same for games like Assassin's Creed 4 and Watch Dogs. You know,
yeah, absolutely. I have no point. I have no intention of buying those games on the current gen because they're going to be launch titles when I get my new machine.
So if you're getting $50 credit, all you're doing is paying $10 for an upgrade, basically, which isn't right. So bad. I mean, the only thing I would want is my saved games to transfer over. See, that's the issue right there. I don't, you know, it's, if I'm going to buy one game and I'm going to be getting the next gen version, you know, I better be able to transfer my saves.
That's true.
You know, although, I mean, it wouldn't really bother me with a sports game. It would bother me with something like, say, Watch Dogs.
My big question is going to be, you know how it is when a new hardware platform launches, right? And the first games out of the gate typically don't look much better than the existing generation.
You know what?
Is it even going to be worth upgrading?
But you know what? I think this is going to be different because these machines we know from leaks that for the past 2 years, the next gen of games have been in development. I mean, we thought there was a big thing that we thought was going to be in 2012, you know? And I think a lot of people did, but, you know, they discovered they could, you know, there were hardware changes that were made, and so they were just held off on it, you know? So I think this year, okay.
You've bored yourself, Jonah.
No. The other thing is that, here's the thing is that the console specs are getting so close to PC, you know, that
that's they may very just true. Be, with 8 gigs of RAM in each of the new platforms, it's unheard of at a console level. Very common at a PC level, but unheard of at a console level.
So I wouldn't be surprised if the next gen games actually look like next gen games this time around. Cool.
We'll see how they look. I'm excited to see how they look and play in person, right? Seen all the videos and stuff, but there's
a lot of the next gen stuff has nothing to do with graphics. It has everything to do with online connectivity.
Yeah.
You know, because they were making that big deal about Watch Dogs, you know, in which you could actually screw around with your friends in Watch Dogs, you know, online. I'm going to tell you right now, I cannot wait for Ubisoft's upcoming Tom Clancy game. You know the one I'm talking about. The one in
the Division.
The Division. That yeah, looks just amazing. And I'm
the
not
Division
even,
does look very good. It's the first Tom Clancy game I've been excited in since the original Splinter Cell.
Because, you know, it's sort of an MMO, you know. And that's one thing about the next gen consoles as well. There's going to be a lot more MMOs on them.
Yeah.
You know, and you're also going to have free to play games on them too. Cuz Microsoft was very anti-free. Well, not anti-free game, but, you know, they, even if you had a free game, there's going to be a hidden cost to it, you know.
Right.
Now they're going to be truly free to play, and it's going to be very interesting to see how that comes around, because there's a lot of great free to play games, you know, especially MMOs. I mean, do you think we might actually see? Oh, I just realized something. You know what these next gen consoles might be able to play? World of Warcraft.
I would, you know, the only thing stopping them from having World of Warcraft already is keyboard and mouse support. Well, if they could add that, I don't see what.
I mean, you don't, you know, both these machines are going to have USB. If they both use a keyboard, you know, and just use your controller. But the thing is, you know, a lot of MMOs don't even require that. I mean, a lot of it is, you know, I mean, just the spin, you know, a circle menu would do, I would imagine.
I would think, but that would require them to write a new interface.
No, the only thing you need to chat for is to talk to other people.
That's true, but I mean, the whole keyboard interface is a whole macro thing that, you know, lets them Yeah, so you know, without being able to do macros and stuff like that, I don't see how World of Warcraft would quite make it on console.
You could have an in-game macro assigner. You know, you do have a D-pad for a reason. I mean, it won't be four macros, but there you go.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, you know, if Blizzard was worried about, you know, subscribership going down, just imagine what an influx of console gamers would do for it.
That's true.
You know? The question is, would they have cross-platform play like Final Fantasy XIV is going to have, or would it be console gamers get their own servers?
I think the bigger question would be console gamers pay an extra monthly fee for one game. And I don't know that console gamers would.
Not if World of Warcraft was free to play.
And that's true.
Game store, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe there'll be separate servers and explicitly that the console gamers are doing free to play. And they're doing all their microtransactions. You know, World of Warcraft players are free with their wallets. I mean, they pay $25 for a mount. Come on. Real life, $25 for a mount.
Right.
Okay, here's an item that I know that Jordan is probably very excited about. I am too, because I backed it on Kickstarter.
I'm very excited for this.
Wasteland 2 Dynamic NPC Interaction Detailed, and this comes to us from Strategy Informer. An Exile Entertainment previously hinted that Wasteland 2 NPCs would react differently to a player's party, such as if they wore a raider outfit, raiders and others, and other NPCs would react to them as a friend or an enemy. In a new interview, developer president Matt Findlay went into detail. Findlay described, here's a merchant that turns... Finley described, here's a merchant that turns into a store if you help him get his cart out of the mud. Otherwise, he's just a guy that hates you. The conversation that he has with you is really dependent on so many different factors. The makeup of the party. He has different lines if you come up with an all-woman party or if there's a really high charisma male. There are little flags that he'll react to. That particular character loves all-women parties, but some characters may not even give any information to an all-woman party. Because they might have a problem with women. The idea is to make each NPC unique over the worldview. A guy may be more likely to give women information or more likely to give men information. This guy specifically, I think he says something inappropriate. Then he raises his prices. We want to be true to the individual characters and not try to apply some sort of global morality to all the characters in the world. We want to allow the characters to be unique and have their own worldview and be consistent. And then there's just some reactivity that's just cosmetic. It's just changing the intro line or the exit line. If you come in with an all-woman party, the only thing that might change is when the conversation is over, he's like, have a good day, ladies, as opposed to just have a good day. Some of that reactivity just makes it a little more personal, a little bit more unique. Wasteland 2 is expected to see a release at the end of 2013 on PC. By the way, we did not discuss this, but Wasteland was originally supposed to be in October, but it's been delayed. But they say...
I did not know that. That's a bummer.
No, but they said it's still going to be before the end of 2013. So it's November.
As long as it still comes out, I'll be all right with that.
I mean, this is nothing new. I mean, Mass Effect, you know, they'll react to specific things. And Alpha Protocol just went overboard on everything. You know,
now, I can't remember. Is Wasteland 2 rigged the same way the first one is, where you could actually split your party into two pieces?
You could do that. I remember in Wasteland 2 also, you know, they did recognize things like you couldn't go into the women's bathroom if you're a man.
That's true. But if you could split your party into two pieces, you could have a male party and a female party and then get all of the conversation bubbles. That would be awesome.
It's possible.
Not that I'm anally retentive that way, but I might be.
But you know what? Maybe they recognize that you're one party anyway. You know, that you're.
Yeah.
But the thing is that, you know, I'd like to see how much it goes into it, you know?
Yeah.
Because, you know, like I said, one of the big things right now in RPGs is customizing the game to the player's decisions, right?
Right.
And one of the decisions that isn't always met is what the player is wearing. For example, in Mass Effect 3, you can wear a Cerberus outfit, but no one looks twice at you when you do that.
Right, right.
I mean, when I was in when I was playing Fallout 3 and I had, you know, the big super mutant who can talk, right? I just wandered in and out of the Templar base, and you know, they're the ones who are extremely anti-mutant. You know, they kill them on sight. Just because he's running with me, they're not going to even have a snarky word to say to me. It just felt weird, you know. But at least here, it sounds like they really want it. You know, whatever decisions you make, even cosmetically, they're going to react to. And I know a lot of people who do like to make all women parties. You know, they're party of Amazons.
There have been certain games that would react based on, you know, what you were wearing and stuff like that. But I only remember it if, you know, you were running around half naked, there would be comments. It had to be a fairly extreme change in your appearance or behavior that would elicit a comment. Not just you know, male, female, that kind of thing.
I remember one of the Fallout games. I don't remember which one it was. I think it was Fallout 2. If you had a really low intelligence stat, sometimes your only answer was, duh, I guess so. You know? I mean, I want that sort of thing in which whatever your stats are, you know, I want them to react to that. If you have a really high wisdom, I mean, really high intelligence but really low strength, I want the game to – the characters to recognize that. Say, oh, you're a little scrawny brainiac, aren't you? Or something like that, you know?
Yeah, or you know, like they mentioned, having the high charisma. I mean, that's something that you rarely see taken into account in
games. Oh, no. You know what you rarely see taken into account? If you have a really low charisma – and you you're given dialogue. Maybe you're only given one dialogue choice because you have such a low charisma. That's the only thing right. You can say is say something incredibly rude and stupid.
Or luck. Luck doesn't really enter into a lot of games either. You have a stat for it, and it's pretty much useless.
Well, luck usually enters into the percentage rolls. You know, instead of 70%, it's now 80%. You know, that's how it works in Fallout. But. You know, it would be nice if you had a high luck and you went into a casino. And we know that, you know, it's probably Wasteland 2 is probably going to take place in near Las Vegas because the first game took place near Las Vegas. You know, it would be nice if you went there and, you know, you had extra luck, say, making money that way in the casinos. You had high luck or low luck. That's the thing is that, you know, a lot is made about having the high stats, but it's the low stats that are more interesting to me. You know,
when things go horribly, horribly wrong.
I mean, when back in the days when people pen and paper role played, I know they still do, but I mean, back when that was the only option.
Right. You know, people together in the same room at the same time.
When computer gaming came around, people just do all 18s on their character. I mean, everybody's done that in the Gold Box games, in which they just made their character all 18s. You know,
reroll.
Here's the thing in pen and paper. It wasn't really a negative stat to have a low stat. It was just a part of your personality. Yeah, you had a low intelligence, high wisdom, you know, that which means, you know, you may be stupid, but you're book smart. You know, the way I love the explanation that the old Advanced Dungeons & Dragons book gave for the difference between intelligence and wisdom. Intelligence tells you it's raining and wisdom tells you to get an umbrella, you know. So like someone, a mage may have a high intelligence and a low wisdom. You know, so he's really, really smart, but he makes a lot of stupid decisions, you know, and you might have a low strength and say he has a high intelligence, high wisdom, but he has a low strength and a low charisma. Well, that just tells me, you know, he's an ivory tower, someone who works in an ivory tower.
Academic.
You know, who never talks to other people. You know, so he's really socially awkward and he's not very strong because, you know, the most he picks up is a pen, you know, but he's really smart and wise, you know, that sort of thing, you know.
Hey, they make heavy pens.
Dump stats are supposed to give your character, you know, that's why they call it a player character. And that's why I find the third and fourth editions of AD&D so offensive. Because one of the things they took away from D&D was the alignments. You know, they no longer have lawful neutral, lawful evil, lawful, you know, and all that stuff.
Really? I had no idea.
They tossed that out and they went back to law, chaos, and neutral from basic D&D.
Hmm.
Which sucks, you know. I mean, someone who's chaotic neutral, you know, they're just doing what the f*** they want. They don't care.
I am always chaotic good, just so you know.
We're going to move on to listener feedback.
From Arthur the Fifth, at To Assassinate the Series, I dropped the series at Assassin's Creed 2 shortly before Brotherhood came out. I want to pick it up again and catch up to number 4, but the prospect of playing 3 games to do so is daunting. I can see why people want an end to the series. In fact, there seems to be a rising interest in the Resurrection of Prince of Persia franchise. I miss the platforming action. Being able to climb everything technologically is technologically impressive, but it can never beat the platforming on an environment blatantly constructed for your climbing abilities. Well, you know, you had climbing in the Assassin's Creed games. Yeah, I mean,
that was the entire point. I mean,
yeah.
And that was part of the fun part. It was you felt an achievement when you were able to get to the top of the tallest building. You got to, you know, do your little thing in which you surveyed the area, and then you did your little leap of faith into a
Here's my advice, Arthur. I would sit down with the Assassin's Creed 2 trilogy, right? Assassin's Creed 2, Brotherhood, and Revelation. Play through those. And if you like those, first off, Assassin's Creed 2 starts slow. I fully own that Assassin's Creed 2 starts slow. You have to play for the first 45 minutes as Bruce Wayne in a Batman game. I get that. Stick with it until you get to the line, "What? Don't you remember me? It's a me, Mario!" And then everything after that is golden.
But you know what? At least Bruce Wayne kicked ass in Arkham City.
And you know, your wimpy guy at the beginning does get better as he goes on. Once he meets his Uncle Mario, everything is better after that. The remaining two games in the trilogy, both very good. I would say you could actually pass on Assassin's Creed 3. Assassin's Creed 4 is a prequel to Assassin's Creed 3. It's Connor's ancestor. So you could actually play 4 before you play 3.
I'm going to give the reason that you give. I'll play Assassin's Creed when they take the suck out of it again. The thing is that, like I said in podcasts past, the second one, I think it was Revelations, was the first Assassin's Creed I could not finish. And then I tried to start Assassin's Creed 3, and I got through one or two of them. And then you have to do that sneaking around thing, and I just threw up my hands and quit.
See, I have played and completed all of the Assassin's Creed games.
So now that you tell me that, really nothing happens in Assassin's Creed 3. It makes me want to play it even
nothing,
less.
Not a damn thing happens in Assassin's Creed 3. I fully admit that, yes.
Are you saying it's the drum solo of the Assassin's Creed series?
It's very pretty. And it seems to me completely inconsequential to the overall feel of the game. So
first Assassin's Creed again. The very first one, because I want to be able to do assassinations. Damn it!
Yeah. So. The oddball one is the PlayStation Portable version of Assassin's Creed, which is the last of the Altair games.
Yeah, you get to meet her by the way in Assassin's Creed 4.
Which has this is the first
Aveline. Yes, I get it. You get to meet Aveline in Assassin's Creed 4.
You get to meet her in Assassin's Creed 4, but I'm talking about the original PSP game where you play as Altair.
Oh, okay.
That one is an oddball version because instead of assassinations, you have actual boss fights. They are honest to goodness boss fights. They are not assassinations.
But do they have quick time events?
Is it a quick event? I do not recall any quick time events in the PSP version.
Okay, moving on.
Is EverQuest the next big thing since Warcraft? I hate the title. To me, it sounds very stupid.
Just a little note. That is the working title. I mean, they haven't committed to EverQuest next. And I don't know why they don't call it EverQuest 3, except for the fact that it's going to be on the PS4. So I don't know. Maybe they think that people on the PS4 will think they're leaving out because they weren't. That's the strange thing. Because Dragon Age 3 is going to be on next-gen consoles, they're not calling it Dragon Age 3 Inquisition. They're calling it Dragon Age Inquisition. And I don't get the fact, they bought an Xbox One or a PS4. That means they'll think they're missing out, you know? It's like that stupid line in which, you know, the thing that they didn't call the Madness of King George III because American audiences would think it would be the sequel to something. You know?
Yeah, they hadn't seen the King George 1 and 2.
You know, I mean, is the fact that no one's played EverQuest 1 or 2 that they're going to say if they're going to enter in EverQuest 3 feeling like they were left out of something? Really?
I don't know. Anyway, to go on to his comment, I hate the title. To me, it sounds very stupid. There definitely should be a word after the next bit. Getting back to the topic, I hear people say the new EverQuest could be a Warcraft killer, but I don't think there will ever be a Warcraft killer. Warcraft was one of case. It was the right game at the right time at the right place. In 2006, I became obsessed with MMOs. The concept of playing alongside thousands of people was captivating. Not having a credit card, I tried to find a free-to-play MMO, but they were few and far between. Most were crap. People played Warcraft because there was not much alternative. WoW was good, had a lot of people, which made it even more popular. Now there are way too many choices. People flock from one MMO to another. A game that has full servers on release became a desolate wasteland shortly after. So as I said, there will be no WoW killer. There will never be anything like WoW ever again. MMOs will exist in cycles. They have lots of players on release and will... I need to scroll.
Have a steady decline later. and will steadily decline later.
And will steadily decline after, just like any other MMO today.
That's not necessarily true, by the way. Just
there will be something that will kill World of Warcraft, and it will be, hey, do you remember World of Warcraft? Just like people now go, hey, do you remember EverQuest?
But the thing is, people are still playing EverQuest. And by the way, EverQuest and EverQuest 2 are getting their 20th and 10th expansions.
I'm sure both of their players will be very happy.
Well, both free to play. And here's the thing is that the one MMO that I always want to go back to, but, you know, now it's populated, I don't know, it's populated by people I don't like, is Dark Age of Camelot. And I hope someday, because a lot of people have a lot of special memories of Dark Age of Camelot, and it still does things that no other MMO does now. I mean, Warhammer Online tried to do it. It's made by the same developer, which gives you a hint. But I don't know. I just want Dark Age of Camelot and the special feelings I had playing that, you know?
Now that I have a better machine, I need to see if I can get Guild Wars up and running again.
Guild Wars 2. You never play. You don't play Guild Wars 2?
I never got Guild Wars 2. I have the original Guild Wars sitting around here somewhere.
Now, if I remember correctly about Guild Wars, the original one, they were going to shut down the servers but decided not to, if I remember correctly.
I don't know. Hmm. I haven't put it in a computer in 5 years, something like that. I don't know. At a game about America made by British and French. This cannot possibly go wrong. So which coast is London? I bet they will place us under the immigrants division and charge us same numerical price but in pounds. I will admit the idea sounds intriguing, but it might spook the foreigners. If you don't know the U.S. geography, it will be just like playing Skyrim, unknown locations, dangerous roads, and locals that tell you to get out of their country. And the development mix is awesome. If there's anything that the British hate more than Americans, it's the French.
Well, that's not necessarily true, but I guess he's talking about
I don't remember what that comment's referring to.
He's talking about the crew. Remember, that's
the crew, right, right.
That has, you know, from coast to coast.
At the question of the week, after the Duke Nukem Forever fiasco, my pre-order policy changed significantly. I only pre-order a game if I know it's good.
Hold on. Here's a question. When did you pre-order Duke Nukem? I want to know when he pre-ordered Duke Nukem Forever. I want to know if he pre-ordered it 20 years ago, 14 years before.
Yeah, if your pre-order on Duke Nukem Forever was more than 7 years before it came out, I would say you'd get a pass. I pre-ordered Halo 4. I pre-ordered Battlefield 3. I will most likely pre-order Grand Theft Auto 5. The advantage of getting them on release is that the internet won't spoil you in the fun bits. I often pre-order games with strong multiplayer component because that is when they are in the most fun. I never pre-ordered a console before because back then it was considerably large investment for a student. I was going to pre-order a PS4, but I'm continually swaying towards the Xbox. I think I will just end up waiting until January and see how both consoles do. Most next-gen games that I want to play won't be released until 2014. Anyway,
well, here's a problem with waiting until January to see how both consoles are going to. They're both going to be sold out no matter what happens. The actual sales, you look at the minimum like 9 months later, you know. But the thing is that the only worry I'd have towards that I had towards pre-ordering an Xbox One, even though I did it on, you know, the day it was available, and you could always cancel a pre-order. I mean, you know, that's possible. The thing is that the thing that I'm worried about is there going to be enough people buying this to support it so that it makes it profitable for developers to make games for it and also to have people for multiplayer. It looks like it's going to be enough for developers to know that they can make a buck. And the fact that, you know, you can just port a PC game to the Xbox One easily it makes it even more attractive for them. And also there's going to be people on multiplayer. So, you know, and it has the games that I want. Now, it depends on what games you want, you know, which unique games that you want. I mean, if you love Killzone, you know, if you love whatever Sony Santa Monica is going to make, then you get a PS4. If you like Halo, or if you like Gears of War, or if you like, well, I guess Titanfall. You know, if you like those games, you know, what are the other major? You know what I really hope they make? And I know you're going to agree with me instantly that it's way overdue. I'm trying to figure out why Microsoft is still sitting on the Crimson Skies license. I mean, come on, make us Crimson Skies.
Crimson Skies is way overdue. And I think it was tied with the Battletech license in some way or form.
No, I don't think
it was all FASA. It was all FASA. And there hasn't been a Battletech game in forever either.
No. Well, the thing is that Jordan Weissman actually got that license back.
License.
That's why you have MechWarrior Online. And by the way, this is not in the news. I consider putting it in the news, but did we do the story about the little 5-year-old girl who is a MechWarrior Online fan?
I think we did that like the week before or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, she played with her dad, and you know, and she died of cancer. They just hit $100,000.
Nice.
And you can still buy a Genos mech through the 20th of August. There's a little shout out to charity there. Because all the 100% of the purchases go towards the Canadian Cancer Institute, the Canadian Cancer Study Institution. I don't know the exact name of it. I think it's CSC, something like that. So yeah, I mean, like I said, it's all to personal taste. And if you like a box that sits and does nothing and gathers dust, well, you want to get a Wii U. I mean, it's just, it's funny, Oh, by the way, there's a rumor that Zombie U is going to be coming to the Xbox One.
Ooh.
Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting game. It's not a great game, but it's an interesting one. So.
It's really the only Wii U game that I've been looking at other than the hypothetical Eternal Darkness follow-up.
Yeah, I don't think you can have a Wii U exclusive anymore that isn't first party.
I really don't think so. It's not like any of the developers actually used the tablet screen for anything significant. Mm. I would think it would be a fairly easy rewrite to come up with a non Wii U version of those Wii games.
Actually, that reminds me. Did you look at the Games Industry Biz article by that guy who was talking about hopefully about the Wii U? And talking about Nintendo's always
I don't remember reading that article.
That Nintendo innovated in the past two generations of the Wii and the Wii U, trying to do something different with the hardware, and complained that the GameCube was just was too similar to the PS2 and the Xbox. That it was too much of a quote unquote normal console, which I ripped immediately because it's the software. It has nothing to do with the hardware. And we already discussed
this. It had the opposite of a normal controller. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, but if you look back on it, the GameCube was a lot better than the Wii or the Wii U.
They did more with the GameCube hardware ever did with the Wii or the Wii U hardware, and I don't know why.
Potentially could have been doing things a little bit more better than the GameCube, but the fact is that Nintendo allowed themselves to get derailed by the casual consumer. I mean, that's the problem, But we're not gonna get into this because we've discussed this a million times, and we already mentioned that. I'm just wondering, how Nintendo might survive. I mean, didn't you say that the 3DS was having issues in sales?
The 3DS has been having issues with sales. They've dipped slightly. Really, the 3DS is the only thing keeping Nintendo alive at this point.
Yeah, and the thing is, for the life of me, I can't think of anything that I'd want to play on the 3DS, except for maybe Professor Layton, Phoenix Wright crossover that's coming out on it.
That they've been talking about for 3 years materialized.
Yeah, so. Okay, so we're going to move on to gaming history, and the fourth, sixth generation console is going to be discussed now. Take it away, Jordan.
Gaming history, Microsoft Xbox. The Xbox is a video game console manufactured by Microsoft. It was released on November 15th, 2001 in North America, followed by Australia and Europe in 2002. It was Microsoft's first foray into the gaming console market. The sixth generation console competed with Sony's PlayStation 2, Sega's Dreamcast, and the Nintendo GameCube. It was the first console produced by an American company since the Atari Jaguar ceased production in 1996.
By the way, that blows my mind that, for 5 years, there was only Japanese consoles out there.
Oh yeah, absolutely. In 1998, four engineers from Microsoft's DirectX team, Kevin Baucus, Seamus Blackley, Ted Hayes, and DirectX team leader Otto Birks, disassembled some Dell laptop computers to construct a prototype Microsoft Windows-based video game console. The team hoped to create a console to compete with Sony's upcoming PlayStation 2, which was luring game developers away from the Windows platform. The team approached Ed Fries, the leader of Microsoft's game publishing business at the time, and pitched their Direct Xbox console based on the DirectX graphics technology developed by Burke's team. Fries decided to support the team's idea of creating a Windows DirectX-based console.
By the way, I did not realize at the time that the entire reason why it's called an Xbox is because of DirectX. I mean, I never put two and two together there. I just thought Microsoft just thought the letter X was cool, like Bender does.
During development, the original Direct Xbox name was shortened to Xbox Microsoft's marketing department did not like the Xbox name and suggested many alternatives. During focus testing, the Xbox name was left on one of the list of possible names to demonstrate how unpopular the Xbox name would be with consumers. However, consumer testing revealed that Xbox was preferred by far over the original suggested names, and Xbox became the official name of the product.
You know what? They should have had.
I would love to know what else they were going to call it.
You know, I wonder if one of the names was Durango.
Durango. The Xbox was Microsoft's first video game console after collaborating with Sega to port Windows CE to the Dreamcast console. Microsoft repeatedly delayed the console, which was first mentioned publicly in late 1999 during interviews with Microsoft's then CEO, Bill Gates. Gates stated that a gaming/multimedia device was essential for multimedia convergence in the new times. He'd even been quoted as saying, quote, "If we do not advance, we'll be the next generation. We will most certainly fall behind our competitors, Apple." The Xbox was officially announced at the Game Developers Conference on March 10, 2000. Audiences were impressed by the console's technology. At the time of Gates' announcement, Sega's Dreamcast sales were diminishing, and Sony's PlayStation 2 was just going on sale in Japan. The Xbox was officially unveiled to the public by Gates and guest professional wrestler The Rock at CES 2001 in Las Vegas on January 3, 2001.
I did not know that either. The Rock introduced it.
The Rock.
We have to ask Dwayne. I want to ask Dwayne Johnson if he remembers that he was the one who helped unveil the Xbox.
Microsoft announced Xbox was release dates and prices at E3 2001 in May. Most Xbox launch titles were unveiled at E3, and most notably Halo, Combat Evolved, and Dead or Alive 3. Due to the immense popularity of gaming consoles in Japan, Microsoft delayed the release of the Xbox in Europe to focus on the Japanese video game market. Although delayed, the European release proved to be more successful than the launch of the Xbox in Japan. Some of Microsoft's plans proved effective. In preparation for its launch, Microsoft acquired Bungie and used Halo Combat Evolved as its launch title. At the time, GoldenEye 007 for the Nintendo 64 had been one of the few first-person shooter games to appear on console, some other ones being Perfect Dark and Medal of Honor. Halo Combat Evolved proved to be a good application to drive the Xbox's sales.
You think?
On November 15, 2001, Xbox launched in North America and quickly sold out. Its launch in the region was successful, selling 1.53 million units 3 months after launch, which is higher than its successor Xbox 360, as well as the GameCube, PlayStation 3, Wii U, and even the PlayStation 2 and Wii. In 2002, Microsoft made the second place slot in consoles sold in North America. The Xbox has sold 24 million units worldwide as of May 10, 2006, according to Microsoft. This is divided out to 16 million units sold in North America, 6 million in Europe, and just 2 million units sold in Japan. The Xbox was almost always behind the PlayStation 2 in terms of sales, although in April 2004, the Xbox outsold the PS2 in the U.S. despite lagging behind the PlayStation 2's sales. The Xbox was an overall success, especially in North America, keeping a steady second place in the generation sales.
I wonder what game was released in April of 2004 that would make the Xbox's sales spike like that. Jade Empire, maybe?
I don't know.
Because I know that the old Knights of the Old Republic was a 2003 release. Keep going, I'm going to find
popular
out.
Launch games for the console included Dead or Alive 3, Amped Freestyle Snowboarding, Halo Combat Evolved, Fusion Frenzy, Project Gotham Racing, and Jet Set Radio Future. Jet Set Radio Future was not a launch title, I don't believe.
It wasn't a launch
title. In fact,
it was a Japanese launch title.
I don't think so. The Xbox's successor, the Xbox 360, was officially unveiled and announced on May 12, 2005 on MTV and released in North America on November 22, 2005. Mm-hmm. NVIDIA ceased production of the Xbox's GPU in August 2005, which marked the end of the brand new Xbox production. The Xbox was discontinued in Japan in 2007, immediately after the 360's launch due to poor sales in the country. Sales were much better throughout Europe and North America, where the console was discontinued in late 2008 and early 2009, respectively.
By the way, the only games that were released for the Xbox in April, the only game that was released in Xbox in April was Hitman Contracts. Hmm. And the only other game that I can think of, I did not know Fallout Brotherhood of Steel. Oh, God. I remember. Oh, maybe Ninja Gaiden was it. Yeah, it probably was based on the sales of Ninja Gaiden. And, you know, The first Ninja Gaiden game was released on the Xbox, and it wasn't released on the PlayStation console for a very long time.
And Ninja Gaiden Black, yeah. The Xbox 360 supports a limited number of the Xbox's game library if the player has an official Xbox 360 hard drive. Xbox games were added up until November 2007. Xbox game saves cannot be transferred to the 360, and the ability to play Xbox games through the Xbox Live has been discontinued since April 15, 2010. It is still possible to play Xbox games on the Xbox 360 with a system link between the two consoles.
Yeah. So, so I bought the Xbox on launch, and I was actually there. Unfortunately, I was forced to buy a $600 bundle for this system, which came with three games, an extra controller. So I guess that worked out, right? Because I don't remember what the actual cost of the Xbox. What was the cost of the base Xbox for launch? Was it $400? Maybe
$300.
Okay, so
$299.
So I got ripped off badly, but you know that's what. I think it was EB at the time, actually, now that I remember correctly. It was EB that ripped me off.
I walked into my local Fred Meyer store and put cash down and walked away.
Don't brag.
And then I had to go teach because I was teaching back then, and so it sat in my classroom taunting me.
Did it taunt the students? I mean, did they see, oh, God, he got an Xbox? I didn't think the Xbox was a big deal when I bought it, you know. Here's my thinking when I bought the Xbox, okay? I really enjoyed the Dreamcast, you know, and the Dreamcast I knew was failing. And I said, you know what, okay, I'm going to get a new console, but I want a new console. So, you know, I said, oh, the Xbox is coming out, fine, I'll get that, you know.
I played Halo a couple of weeks ahead of time in a GameStop and was sold.
Yeah,
so I bought the Xbox, I bought Halo, and then I had to go to a second store to get Project Gotham, and I was set.
So I never played Project Gotham Racing. I did have I had to have three games, right? I picked Halo and I picked Dead or Alive 3. And then first I did that game that was kind of crappy, not Azeric, but another one in which you had goblins on stilts. That's all I remember from it. And you had colored magic. So I said, that's okay. So I returned.
Oh, yeah. I remember that one.
Something Walker. Nightwalkers, you know.
Yeah, I'm blanking on the name of it. I think I bought that one, too. I don't remember if I kept it or not, but I bought that one.
Well, I can find out right now. So Xbox. Here we are. Because I remember the name immediately. Okay, so here are the Xbox launch titles. Ready? Halo, Combat Evolved, Oddworld, Munch's Odyssey, Dead or Alive 3, Project Gotham Racing, NFL Fever 2002, which was Microsoft's football game, Air Force Delta Storm, Mad Dash Racing, Cell Damage, Arctic Thunder, Fusion Frenzy, Jet Set Radio Future, and Double Steel were Japan launches. Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2X, Transworld Surf, 4x4 Evo, and Shrek. And you know what? I cannot believe they don't have the name of that game there.
Must have been a launch window title.
No, it was on launch day because I remember this because I was writing for games. I was writing for GamePen at the time, right? And Microsoft kept sending us screenshots for this game that was being developed for the Xbox. You know, and they heavily promoted it to us.
It had like a magic component. I remember that.
Colored magic, yes. And I remember having these things on stilts that were wandering around, and it was Night Stalker or Night Magic Walker or something like that. So anyways, I returned that. Then I picked up, and they don't list this, NBA Live 2002. And I wasn't a big fan.
Wasn't Perfect Dark also a launch title, or was that slightly afterwards?
No, Perfect Dark Zero was one of the games I had. No, that was Perfect Dark was Perfect Dark Zero was an Xbox 360 launch title.
Oh, 360 title. Yeah. Sorry.
So, and then I finally picked up Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2X, and I stuck with that one. And, you know, the thing is that I was not that big a Tony Hawk fan. You know, I never played it. And, you know, skateboarding, whatever. You know, at third try, I was like, okay, whatever, I'll give it a shot. And I really enjoyed Pro Skater, you know, 2X. And I ended up buying Pro Skater 3. So, you know.
The game you're thinking of is Nightcaster.
Nightcaster, right.
It came out in January, so it was a couple months after.
So that's what happened with me. And if I paid $600 plus tax for three games, which are $50 each, and a controller, which is also $50, if I remember correctly, that's $200, $300. Yeah, I got ripped off by $100. But on the other hand, you know what?
Paying the New York tax.
No, I was playing an early adopter tax, and also the place was mobbed.
Yeah.
So I said, screw it. Okay, fine, whatever. I want it, and you know, and I was rewarded because I popped in Halo that night, And my editor said, "Oh, did you get to any?" He said, "Oh, you didn't get to that part yet." And that part referred to the first appearance of the Flood, you know, when the game
comes
ahead. So he had played ahead. So, you know, I think I bought it a week after launch, maybe. Anyways, so that's my launch story. So, and your launch story is you walked into a store and bought it.
Yep.
anyways, our question is very simple. The question of the week is, which do you do most of your gaming on, console or PC? I should say now, because a lot of people shift their answers. For example, me, I'm usually a heavy console gamer, but I've stopped using my Xbox 360 for a while, and I've been doing a lot of PC gaming. And I think, you know what happens with me is that I get burned out on the console sometimes, you know? And I want to watch TV, so I can't do that unless I'm playing on my computer. Although I will say this, you know, with the Xbox, you know, picture-in-picture, that's not going to be a problem anymore now, is it?
No, that's true.
You know, so, and also I could do this podcast while on Skype and I'm playing something. Oh, that's not true because I won't be able to record it, but still. So anyways, how about, I already know the answer for you.
I'm almost exclusively console gamer. You know, I have the portables. I have a decent PC now, which, you know, I will experiment with it. But my problem is, and it boils down to this: I hate using a mouse and keyboard to play a game. It feels unnatural. I don't like it. And I, in general, hate point and click games. I want to feel like I'm controlling a character. I don't want to feel like I'm clicking on a mouse. And as a rule, I just hate PC games.
But I play a lot of my games with my Xbox 360 controller. I mean, like Batman Arkham games.
That's true. You know? But you know, if I'm going to use a controller, I might as well play on a console on my big screen TV instead of on my 10.6 inch surface screen.
Yeah. So. And by the way, I wonder, it'd be a jump for joy for you, I'm pretty sure, as if Square Enix announced, or was it Square Enix, announced a Phantasy Star 3, you know?
Well, Phantasy Star Online 2 needs to be ported. It's been out in Japan for over a year.
I'm not talking about handhelds. I'm talking about major consoles. Yeah. Didn't you say that was your first MMO?
Well, Phantasy Star Online 2 is available for PC as well, and they haven't announced any port for it either.
Well, I'm just saying,
Sega needs to get on the stick.
Sega, that's right. I'm just saying, you know, if they announced the Phantasy Star on, maybe that's why they haven't done anything. Maybe that's not why they're not doing any, bringing that game to Japan. That's the United States. It's because it's going to be a next gen console game.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that would be nice, wouldn't it? Anyways, look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net along with industry news. Look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments at our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast or the forums at gamingpodcast.net/forum or send us comments to fans@gamingpodcast.net. You can also check out our gaming news at gamestooge.com. Also, subscribe to us on iTunes and leave some iTunes comments.
Yay, iTunes comments.
So, yeah. So, we finished our tour of the next-gen consoles. I mean, not the current gen, the last
the current gen, the last previous gen consoles,
sixth gen consoles. Yes, we finished our tour. Although, you know what, maybe I should do the handhelds.
We could do handhelds. We could do the generation before that. I have an NEC Turbo Duo.
maybe I'll talk about the Tandy.
Bonk's Revenge, the Tandy Viz. Oh my gosh, there's not much to say about the Tandy Viz.
I mean, that's everybody. That's baby's first computer. Remember.
Oh, the Tandy Viz was terrible. And, there were a lot of other interesting, you know, there's what I refer to as generation 4.5, right? It was after the Genesis and Super Nintendo, but before the Saturn and PlayStation, there was a whole generation of weird hardware that I have never seen before and we will probably never see again.
Remember, that was when everybody was bragging about 16-bit and 32-bit.
16-bit, 32-bit. I mean, you had the CDI, but you also had the 3DO. The Tandy Viz was in there. You know, you had weird stuff like the Sega CD and the Sega 32X. You had this whole like half generation of hardware that just kind of amounted to nothing.
How about this? And I own this.
Pioneer Laser Active.
How about if I did the Coleco Atom?
Coleco Atom would be awesome.
Yeah. I mean, that was my first computer, and then I quickly adopted a C64 soon after.
I loved Smurfs.
Ah, Super Smurf. I mean, they had the Super version of the games on that, and they had that tape that always – the problem with that is that the tapes always got screwed up for that. Yeah. You know, but I got – you know, I have a hard drive. I got a disk drive for the Atom, and I never used it because it died. Just, you know, not the machine itself, but just the entire thing.
I didn't know they made a disk drive for the Atom.
See, there you go. There you go. See, you didn't know they made a disk drive. I bought one, and it's still up there. It's still here, and my Atom is not.
Bummer.
But at least you could plug into the Atari 2600 module into it, too, though.
Right, right.
Anyways, that's the podcast for this week, and we'll see you next week.
Good night, everybody.